5 now, which is an update on key issues in health and social care. So the first item under this is public health update. Now, have we got Simon with us?
Yes, he's there.
Yes, Simon, did you want to lead on this? Welcome, Simon. Nice to see you.
Good evening. Yes, very happy to lead. So, a very short page, just giving an update to the committee on a few issues in public health. Firstly, starting with the public health strategy that was signed off by Cabinet in June 2020, and I thought it's just worth bringing that here, because I don't think it came here due to COVID on its journey. Just to say that we are developing those action plans. And to remind the committee, this is the council's public health strategy, and then we are working with our colleagues and partners around the system to make sure that we have a fully system-wide approach to prevention and public health, working beyond White Trust, the CCG and the voluntary sector. So that's going ahead very well. Really pleased that the island now has a public health strategy. I'll just move through the items quickly. I can take questions again, if that's right, Chair.
Thank you.
So with regard to service delivery, just worth updating that our programmes are being stepped back up again with a more focus on the face-to-face support, as you would expect, particularly for those more vulnerable clients. So some of the things we implemented over the kind of lockdown period, such as treatment by post or less frequent prescriptions, those where it worked well, we will establish, and those where we need to review, we have done that, so that's really positive. And furthermore, we're developing our models for stock making services and weight management services going forward, so some key work there that we need to do. I guess it's well known the key area of work that we've been leading is the COVID response, and whilst other areas are kind of recovering, we are still in full response mode from the public health perspective, so I'll give a little update about that if that's okay. So just to start off, we're in a very good position with regard to COVID-19 and the number and rates of cases. Just to update the data, because I've submitted it as of this evening, there was still two cases in the last 7 days, or was different last 7 days, and there was that brings our total number of cases to 444 cases. That is a rate of 6.4 per 100,000 for the last 7 days. That rate compares with the England average of 33.2 and 14.8 for South East for the last 7 days. So you can see we're in a really good position, a really positive position with regard to coronavirus. We do know that hasn't impacted the same or different populations, so we know there's been vulnerable communities impacted, those BME populations and those who are obese. So we need to really think about how we manage that and also support those communities now so that they can prepare for any increase in cases, so actually we're ready for that and doing work with the NHS and with partners to do that. So we've now moved to a phase where we're tracking and tracing cases through both the NHS Track and Trace programme, Public Health England and our local approaches, and that's about increasing testing in communities. And I do know there's been a challenge with testing, particularly in the last few weeks. That is due to a national issue in the labs. So the lab capacity hasn't kept up with the demand for tests, which is a huge problem. So we are working with our Department of Health and Social Care colleagues as much as we can to increase that testing lab capacity. And we are also looking at whether how and when we step up a local tracing support programme alongside national test and trace. So we're developing that with Public Health England to see what we should do there. So finally, just worth saying, the governance for this is we've got a health protection board that I chair weekly with colleagues from the Trust, from the CCG, and key officers from the council to look at the data, outbreaks and situations, and oversee any significant events such as going on in the community. And then we also log any care homes, because I have a role to ensure care homes are safe, and if we close them to visitors, I do have that authority. And then we also work to think about communications, the powers that we need to implement to do anything, and agree any risk and mitigation. We do that on a weekly basis, and that's been very successful. That really kind of gives a very brief summary of the work we're doing, dealing with cases and outbreaks and situations on a daily basis, 7 days a week. So we're doing that to protect people and prevent spread and manage outbreaks. The final of the paragraph 17 and 18 just highlights, the chair requested a little update on Public Health England. Not much to say yet, but we are working with them to ensure that there is a safe national programme and approach for public health, not just around health protection, but for the rest of public health movement nationally. Through the Association of Stretch Public Health, we are giving views and input to that development. Chair, I'll stop there and happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Simon. So we've got questions in this order from Joanna, from Michelle, and then from Michael, and now John Howe. Whilst you were talking, Simon, Maggie did send a message just to say thank you so much for the support you've given the NHS Trust and during this critical time. And I think it has to be noted, Simon, that you seem to have an inexhaustible amount of energy to devote to this, and I think you've really stepped up to fill your position very, very fully. And you know, that's just from a humble observer, but you know, well done. So can we go to Joanna, please?
People have contacted us and can't access test at all, or they're sent, you know, to somewhere very far away on the mainland. People are also concerned that people are being advised to come here from the mainland. So is that being addressed? Is the system that works out kind of distances going to look at, logistics when people have to travel and risks associated with that, such as having to travel by ferry? And the other thing was, I don't know whether you can answer this, but I wondered whether you had any information about the app. So the COVID app is due to be extended nationally within the next couple of weeks. Healthwatch England has worked really closely with NHSX in the development of the app, and through them we clearly stated that they needed to communicate a lot better with the public, particularly the Isle of Wight public, around the app, advising that they should give regular updates. People want to know, you know, the Isle of Wight population generally happy to help, but they want to know how it's helping people, whether the app is successful, how many people have downloaded the app, what it's done so far to support the kind of track and trace system. So we wrote to the Secretary for State as well with our concerns about communication. And I just wondered whether you could give any more information on that.
Thank you, Joanna. A couple of very good points. Simon.
Yes, thank you, Joanna. So, on the first one, so as you've probably heard nationally, people have been sent from, you know, Cornwall to Inverness for a test, which is obviously completely inappropriate. So they put an arbitrary 75 miles onto the website, so you can't travel more than 75 miles for a test. However, that doesn't take any other considerations in, and I've been really clear that actually probably travelling 75 miles for a test is inappropriate in itself, because you put me and my family in the car. Actually, there's no way I'll be able to travel 75 miles and get there, have a test and get back without stopping for a wee somewhere with a small child. So actually, that travel is not appropriate for anything. For the Isle of Wight, it's even more acutely important, because actually, you have to be in a, if you're, you know, you're in a car, you stay in your car. So we have raised that, and we keep pushing that up the line on a daily basis to try and resolve that, and it's not resolved. But I think it's not acceptable if you have to travel far for a test. And that is because the lab capacity isn't there, so they shut the local testing facilities down, particularly because we're in an area of low prevalence, which is really, really good for us, but it doesn't help that situation. So yes, I agree with you. We do what we can, which is a national problem we're trying to solve. With regards to the app, I'm not that close, actually. I think it is an addition to our test and trace. And can I just really emphasise, our contact tracing is going really very well on the Isle of Wight and locally in the South East. We trace, I think it's well over, I can't remember the figure, but it's well over 80%, which is really, really good. And that means we are contacting the vast majority of people, which enables us to do that proper contact tracing.
Thank you for clarifying that, Simon, that's really important. Michelle, what was your question?
It's sort of on the same line, really, a bit of a plea. At all weekends, there hasn't been any internet access to book any tests at the testing site. There hasn't been any availability to get any postal delivery. And obviously, we are not advising people to drop in. That was the case all day today. I've had several inquiries. I've had police queuing outside because they want to know what to advise people who are ringing. So we have, and it said particularly on the internet site today, please do not ring the phone lines. So today and yesterday, and I'm not clear on Saturday, we've been unable to book internet, phone lines, no postal. Now that has, and I totally appreciate what you're saying. And I was explained to me today about it was the lab issue, but this really has to be escalated nationally extremely quickly. We haven't even gone into winter yet properly. We haven't even got a surge, and the system is really faltering. Really the plea is to really this needs to be escalated as soon as possible. You know, on a different level, I can access Amazon, I can get a computer stand. Yesterday afternoon I looked, it's delivered today. I appreciate the rate limiting step is the lab, but they have to sort this out.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. So it was escalated, I'm trying to think which day it was, 2 weeks ago now, all the chief executives from the South East local authorities wrote to Dido Harding and to the Secretary of State. And I think that's why you started to see the pressure coming out saying we apologise, it's just a national apology. So absolutely, we're pushing it. There is some increase in lab capacity with Loughborough coming, I think it's Loughborough coming online. It's our biggest risk because we can't test people, we don't know who's got it, and then we can't contact trace them and so on and so forth. So you're absolutely right, Michelle, we are pushing. Please do push them all the routes that you can push, because actually we do need to resolve this, and it's difficult because we've been given local control over it, yet I have my hands tied behind my back, so I can't do anything. We're working very closely with your teams and the Trust to see how we can work together on this issue to see if we can do some kind of local solutions in the interim, particularly for outbreaks where we're concerned. So we're doing that as well. So I agree.
So Michelle, Alison Smith has just posted that that it has, you've seen that, and and we've got John Metcalf. John, did you want to say something on this item?
Yes, thank you, Chairman. I think Simon's probably made the point I was going to make about that all 23 upper tier local authority chief executives in the South writing to the Secretary of State saying effectively, you know, you want us to work on the testing programme, but we need to have access to the tests. And as Simon has highlighted, I think there's almost a daily letter that's going into civil servants at the NHS to make the point about, you know, having this local control, but also specific unique circumstances about the island. I think the one point that is worth making, though, is that, you know, booking slots are now made available the evening before for morning appointments and the morning before for afternoon appointments. So just because people try and can't get through the first time, we'd encourage everybody to just keep coming back to the 119 or to the website, because the slots are being sort of released on almost the kind of half daily basis. So the first time you might not get a slot, but the second time you might get a slot. So we'd encourage everybody to return on a regular basis to make sure that they do get a local slot. But in the meantime, we'll keep the lobbying up. And I understand the MP's also raised it directly with government as well. So a multi-pronged approach at the moment.
So maybe we could have a press release to. So, Sorry, Simon.
One of the right people to book, test. They don't book a test unless you've got symptoms. That's the, you know, we can't have people turning up. Sorry, John.
So maybe we could have a press release just to confirm that. I don't know. So, Michael, it's your turn now.
Before I go on to my questions, I just want to come in to this point. We obviously, as a health scrutiny committee, do have some powers, and we do go up to the select committee in government. So I'll come back to this, but when we end this item, I think it's important that we put a proposal from this committee that we actually support, you know, from what Michelle and others have said, this very crucial thing on testing, which is very important. So I'll come back, if you can make a note, or Paul can make a note, to come back for a proposal in that regard, because I think we should put our lobbying powers in place in regard to this. And to personally do it, I spoke on Zoom today to two, you know, key workers who have got symptoms and are desperate to get a test and were actually very distressed that they couldn't go into their jobs and everything today because of it, and actually caused them a lot of distress. So we do really need to all come together and lobby as much as possible. I'll go on to my questions, Simon. Thank you and your team for all the work you're doing. I'm very puzzled by these COVID-19 marshals that have been announced by the government, particularly around social distancing and the groups of six. Any more information about those COVID marshals? Who will they be? Who will be responsible for them? What's the governance, etc., regarding them?
Very good questions, Councillor Lee, and I think we're waiting for information and also how they'll be funded. So we're just waiting for that. And also, we do on the island have COVID ambassadors and a beach ambassador type role, and they're doing very well. But we haven't had the full detail of what they are or what they're going to do yet. But we are talking to police colleagues, so they've got powers and how we work that together. But I'm afraid I have no more information at this point in time. We're waiting for government information on that.
Thank you.
Before I go on to my other question, I have to sort of say that, I mean, you did have beach ambassadors over the summer. I think there could have been better communication with parish and town councils and things at local level. There were some incidences where there was confusion with the ambassadors, particularly in Ryde, from my experience. So I do think that if you're going to have COVID marshals and going things, that there does need to be that communication with the various, you know, communities on the ground to avoid that. The word of communication was raised by Joanna, and I think we need to look at improvements on that. My last question was on your data. We obviously were very concerned at the beginning of the summer. If you'd had a vote on half the community, you know, would have voted to not allow any visitors on the island, and the other 50% obviously desperately wanted to get our economy going. We've obviously had considerable numbers of visitors, and it looks as if from your data that we are still low risk, even though we had, you know, people from all over the country coming. Here you couldn't get a camping site, most beds were full, so people were coming. Obviously the fast cats got going in August, and people were coming over, and we had a huge amount of day trippers and things. So the can you sort of allay our fears that actually we have successfully brought visitors over and still kept low risk? Now, have we got evidence on this case?
So I think there's a number of things to just to pick up there. You're right, we have a low number of cases. I think we have to remember we're still in a pandemic, so the risk is still there. Also, the risk is greatly reduced if people do social distancing, wear face coverings and do good hand hygiene. Actually, we need to be really good at that for the community, and that's something we really need to keep promoting. And actually, and if businesses are able to do that with their visitors, as with the people who live here, that would be really, really positive. And maintaining that would enable us to lower the risk as much as possible. But we do know that there are cases in the community, and as I said, we've had, we're up to 444. So it's just be really mindful of where we are, and to remind the public that this is still a risk that we need to be aware of, and to keep those measures in place and to do them personally. And it is really hard, and you know, I want to thank the Ottawa residents for doing these strong public health measures. As you said, I never, as Director of Health, thought I'd be doing this kind of strong public health measures. So that's what we need to be mindful of, and remember that there is still a risk of coronavirus spreading.
Right, thank you, Simon.
So sorry, can I ask a supplementary to that? Was the Pacific question is on the visitors, have we got data that you know, our relationship with visitors, which is crucial to our economy and has been crucial of this, you know, part season. Some businesses, you know, have needed a couple of months of visitors to come forward. Have we got evidence that we are a safe place to visit for our residents and for our visitors?
I don't think we can say we're a safe place because we're in the middle of a pandemic. What we are seeing is, as I said earlier, we've got a low number of cases, which is really, really positive. We're managing those measures that we have put in place to manage that spread. Any kind of increase in this, if you don't want to catch coronavirus, stay in your house. Actually, but that's not good for the economy, that's not good for us, so let's go out and about. And so we're going to see, as people go out and about, more spread of infection. But if we can keep those measures of 2 meters apart, good hand hygiene and face covering, and now the rule of six, that will really help us to keep that risk down.
John Metcalf wants to comment on this now.
Yes, thank you, Chairman. If I may, just a brief comment, because I think one of the things that did happen before the summer was a huge effort from the hospitality industry to make their buildings, their premises, COVID secure, with a huge amount of help from the environmental health team, who spent a lot of time in webinars and seminars giving them help and advice. So I think the buildings that opened up, and the premises and businesses that opened up in as safe a way as possible. I think Simon is absolutely right, though. Safety is ultimately down to the individual and people following all the appropriate measures about hand, face, and space, which I think is the latest buzzwords. But everybody on the island, in terms of businesses, worked very hard to put those businesses in a COVID-secure way. Our environmental health teams continue to work with our businesses about how they can operate in a COVID-secure way. But as I say, it's down to the individuals, and I think. Perhaps a question back to Simon, but I still don't think we really know or will know the outcomes of the summer for another couple of weeks, given the incubation periods that go with the virus and how things pass. So, yeah, I think it's probably too early to say, but I think there was a huge response from businesses to work with us and open in as safe as way as possible.
Yeah, so when it is a good news message, John, we can announce it as a good news message. Now, last question on this section from John Howe, Councillor Howe. John, are you there?
I'm here. Thank you, Chairman. My one question is I'd like to know what's in place for care homes if this epidemic does get worse over the coming months, but whether we're waiting for something to happen and then all panic, or is there something in place to actually at least have a program to prepare themselves, and so we're not in the same mess as we were to provide the right equipment and everything else to these care homes to be able to deal with it?
Nora's on the line or Carol, but I don't think so. If I start off and others can add in. But we've got a really good program with our care homes. My team works very closely with Carol Tozer's team, Director of Adult Services, to ensure that actually the care homes, all the way through, you know, yes, you're right, this came through quite fast and we need to kind of be on the front foot. Things like personal protective equipment, managing outbreaks, any situations. So as soon as we know situations and manage those, we do a lot of preventative work to ensure that spread doesn't take place in the homes. There is a weekly testing program, but again, you would have heard that's slightly slowed down by the lab capacity issue. There's a number of things in place. That means that we're in a really good place with our care homes to support them should there be an outbreak, to help them prevent it, and also to kind of manage that on an island-wide basis. I know that others may come in and be able to help.
Yeah, so
Simon.
So we're now leading into the second item, but just before we do that, I know there's Alison wants to make a comment, and Joanna wants to make a comment, but we'll take those into the second section, which is adult social care.